into a process of, well, that's getting into them. And that's what it was. I didn't understand what republicanism was. I didn't understand what socialism was. And, you know, no one wakens up in the morning and go, I'm a Republican or I'm a socialist. You wake up and go, this is wrong. What's happened? What am I going to do against this or to stop this? That's what I've learned in the process of struggle. And throughout the years, I've seen so many people who I knew, you know, being beaten, brutalised and dying. You know, I remember a young child in Twinburg being shot dead by plastic balls. I remember when I sat here years ago watching on TV screens when I seen myself as a child looking at the coffin of Bobby Sands, right? And that threw back so many memories to me. That's when I actually moved to Twinburg.
What age were you when you moved to Twinburg?
We would have moved to Twinburg, and I would say late 80s, early 81, right?
What and school were you at that time? You're in secondary school?
No, still in St. Finian's. I didn't go to secondary school until I was 11. But I was about 10 years of age, late 80s, early 81. And it was a case of, we lived in what was called rabbit burrows, right? Because they were so dark and dingy. You know what I mean? It was outside toilets then. And it was probably 5 kids cramped into a squalid room. There was no hope of work and bad conditions. Although at times, my stepfather did get work. And I remember one occasion where he came back and it was brilliant. You know, he came back and I got a big dartboard and a bag of Marley's. And we soldiers and the family all got together. And it was in memory now, I asked in mind, because it was such a hard struggle. That
Twinburg was a new housing estate built at this time, was it?
Twinburg, this was still in Sebastopol Street, right? But when we moved to Twinburg, it was a different world altogether, Sean. You know, when we got there, we were driving up in a van, and you just seen rabbits and foxes. It was still in West Belfast, per se, but it was a different world. There was fields, there was rabbits, foxes, everything. And you were going, Jesus, this is brilliant. But it was from the frying pan and the fire, because that's where the family of Bobby Sands lived. And I remember getting out, because we used to have, from a bedroom window, you could climb out the window and jump onto the coal bunker. And when he died, I remember climbing down, jumping on the coal bunker, going out. And you had bin lids, which were like metal. And you went out and you bang, doo, 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 bang the bin lids. And then all hell broke loose. Then, and even then, you know, you still watch the IRA train in the streets. But also, the Brits would come in these days in helicopters. Because you could look out your bedroom window and you could see them coming into the fields and coming, jumping out of helicopters, mm-hmm. and coming out of helicopters. And again, them days, the doors were left open. I remember, again, many occasions, this was when we started moving into my early teens, and many occasions being chased through houses and all the Brits after the wee back bastard again, do you know what I mean? And all those different types of things. So, you know, it was brutal times.
And this is an experience not only of yourself, but growing up with your friends and...
Oh yeah, yeah.
That was a common experience.
It was a common experience by everybody was being brutalised and beaten, stuff like that, in some way or other. And there was nobody who wasn't affected by it. It mightn't have been deaths in the families, but it was brutality. It was even just the small things when you're walking about and they were hassling you, were stopping you, they were searching you, they were slapping you, they were cursing at you, they were spitting at you. All those things played their part in people standing together, and that's had no doubt about it. The IRA and the Provisional IRA and the MDS, you know. They were successful in many ways because they had the support of the communities, of the mothers, the fathers, the brothers, the sisters, and even the children, right? They had that support, and that's why they were so successful over the years in their own terms.
Oh, that's, you know what I mean? That level of support we were able to sustain. So we're into the 1980s now.
Mm-hmm.
Twinburg, I take it you moved on to secondary school, yeah?
I moved to secondary school, Sean. I went to LaSalle. And I was just turned. I remember I had to actually leave.
Same school as himself, but anyway.
I had to leave St. Finian's and go to the Instant Luke School. It was too far to travel. In them days, the black taxis, you know, it wasn't the same as now. In them days, when you were a kid, you put your hand out and the black taxi driver decided where they wanted to go. And very few of them wanted to go up into Twinburg. So I could be standing there for hours, drenched, and you couldn't get home. So I got to a stage where I just got too much trying to walk home from the Falls Road to Twinburg. And now I went to Sinnock School, then I went to LaSalle. LaSalle was a good school, very, very good sports school, very good academic school. And even though I had my problems, I only started to realise year later, and, you know, my dyslexia stuff. My school report at that time said that I excelled in many things, but I still failed my 11 plus. And the reason I failed my 11 plus, I came to understand years later, was a lot to do with the material circumstances of my life. You know, at the end of the day, you know, there was a war going on where you lived. There was still the social and economic deprivation at the same time as well. And on top of that, many people didn't see education as a way forward simply because the Catholics weren't getting jobs. Mm-hmm. End of story. Do you know what I mean? So the 11 plus still targets those from social and economic deprived areas, maybe the Shankar Road or the Falls Road, and academic selection, and that should go. You know what I mean?
I see the 11 plus now has been scrapped, although basically it's been replaced by another form of academic selection, so basically it continues under name. Grammar schools still have introduced entrance examinations, but
that's right.
So LaSalle then, did you leave it like most people suppose then, this about 15, 16, or did you stay on and do A levels or what?
I got a couple of O levels and then I was kept on for a year to do other O levels, and then I left, and in them days, you know, given the still, it wasn't as visible brutality, but you started to really understand then, you know, that the trauma of what you went through started to have an effect on you, and it affected many people many different ways, and right through till today, there's people still affected by it, and they probably will till the day they died. The amount of people who were into drugs, alcohol, taking their lives and stuff was really, really big. So for me, you know, when I left there, I held a bird with peers, and like many of the day, your only immediate concern was getting a carried and a swallow at the weekend and a Chinese. There was no long term vision of a future, for the simple reason is you didn't believe there would be one, given everything that we actually had went through. So
what did you do for a living? What was your first?
Well, my first job actually was working in, my first part-time job, if you call it that, was working in an ACE scheme. They brought in these ACE schemes for people in the areas, and what it basically was you went into a scheme for a certain amount of time, probably to get you off the dole list or the waiting list and stuff, and you did your time and then you left. But my first full-time job really was stacking toilet rolls down in the centre down there, which is not the county centre, the Westwood Centre, I think called. There, way back in say the early 90s, stacking toilet rolls and stuff. But you know, that was what many people thought, and even I thought in some ways that was the potential. The fact I got a job stacking toilet rolls was better than not having a job. Although I have to say that I did go to college as well. But
is this after LaSalle or?
This is after I finished lower six and went to college, and then I basically left college after the first year of my A-levels to go out and get employment, because I was still living at home at the time. There was 5 hour kids, there was a little money coming into the house and stuff as well.
You were living at Twinbrook?
Still in Twinbrook, yeah. And I got a lot of part-time jobs, as I say, but the first full-time job was stacking tire roads and stuff like that. So, you know, things then started to change a bit. And one of the lessons I learned that when you're applying for a job in Twinbrook, that you don't put down Twinbrook, you put down Demurray, because there was stigma attached to different estates. And that's the reality even today.
Mm-hmm. I mean, regardless
of what, you know, it's still,
like,
it's still
from the Shankill,
from the Shankill, you're from Rathcoole, you're from Twinbrook, you're from Turf. That's the reality, the stigma. No matter what your level of education is, there's still a stigma that attached to it for many employers, whether there's legislation or not. So I found that in the end there. So I eventually moved out of Twinbrook and then moved to South Belfast, and eventually...
Was this when you... Did you set it by yourself, or did you have your partner?
No, I had a partner, and then eventually moved to South Belfast and bought a house in what I would call a leafy suburbia, given what I grew up in. And got a job in the civil service as well, which was, I think it took me about 2 years to get into it, but nevertheless I got in there. And, you know, it was a different world in the sense where not only the fact that I could start to live, realize some of my dreams, was like to travel, you know, and I started going on holidays, you know, and I still love traveling, travel all the world now, but that was one of my dreams. It was also just important to be able to take a fiver out of your pocket and go, do you know something, I fancy a takeaway tonight. You know, really, really small, trivial things, or you know, stuff like that, which you could never, ever thought you could do, just to have cash in the hip. But it did start to get understanding as well of how policing in those areas are policed differently. The policing in working class areas, maybe, as I say, Shankill or Falls. That's when I started to get a realisation of that as well. But also as well, I think I was fortunate that when I went through college, and I went on holiday and I met people who came from Belfast, and some of those people lived in Prosnare's, and we went to Prosnare's. I remember the first time going to Prosnare, I was really frightened. But we liked a wee couple there who we kept contact for a while, but lost contact with. But it started to open my eyes that, you know, the Protestant working class people weren't all thugs with hairy knuckles or forked tongues or whatever. They had the same material concerns that I would have.
And the same aspirations.
And the same aspirations, albeit at the same time having those aspirations crushed because of the social and economic deprivation and because of the areas they came from. So it gave me a lesson that, you asked a question about Republicans and stuff, it gave me a lesson that we had the same interests, but we differ in our religion. You know, because of a wall, if I had been born on your side of the wall, you know what I mean, I would have a different perspective politically, but on the class basis, I would still have the same material conditions of my upbringing, if you understand what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
So I started to understand that.
Were you a member of the union and the civil service? Was there any struggles during that period?
Yes.
In the early 90s there?
There was. I remember in the early 90s there was attacks carried out by both, and threats by both by Republicans and Loyalists on members of ours who worked in Dole offices and stuff. And I remember in the early 90s, you know, being on the branch committee. In fact, I was vice chair in the early 90s of one stage of Branch 8, which is the Child Support Agency in the early 90s. And I remember early to mid-90s, standing on a bench at the front of City Hall with my branch secretary, where speeches were being made to other civil servants that we need to come out, no matter where it comes from Republican threats or Loyalist threats, we need to come out against it. And that was one of my first experiences of trade unionism, and it was a powerful experience to know and to see that people there were coming out against attacks, no matter if they were called by Republicans or called by Loyalists. They were coming in a common bond of unity to stand against them. And that, again, taught me a lesson, and I've learned many, many, many lessons on from that, but that gave me a very, very important experience, as did one other experience of a young guy who came from a Prosnare who had actually called me a racist name on a number of occasions when I was working there. And then when it came to a struggle against low pay, I remember him standing beside me and basically linking arms with me. And then I realised that he just basically looked at me. I realised that our common bond on that basis was of more significance than the fact that I was a different colour. And that was another lesson I carried in life, that, you know, through the basis of class struggle, that people and citizens can break down the barriers of perceptions they have on the other community or another person's sexual orientation or a person's religion or colour or whatever, and come together on a basis of unity in that struggle. Although I have to say, you know, the lessons of history and of imperialism and of the state is they've always played the card of divide and rule, and at certain times it's more difficult than others, but I remember from the early years of trade union activity that, you know, that was one of the things that came foremost in mind.
What was the first political organisation you joined, and why was it? Why did you decide to join?
I remember living up in leafy suburbia, in the Four Winds, and, you know, having a as I say, a good life, travelling and career and all that stuff. And then Orange Parades were marching through areas basically where they weren't welcomed by the overwhelming majority of the residents.
It's Lower Armour?
This was the Lower Armour specifically. And I remember seeing people I knew, including a young man who I knew of his childhood, I knew of the brutality, I knew of the hardship of his life, real hardship of his life. And I seen him standing up, putting his arms out wide, basically saying, okay, and then just getting a batting across the head, then being pulled away like a piece of meat, you know. And that one instant brought me back to years and years and years of seeing and witnessing the same type of brutality. Indeed, even whenever I seen the recent arrest in Ardoyne and the firing of plastic balls and stuff, I could just say to myself, you know, how many people are watching that and seeing that and thinking of the past? And all it takes is a baton or a bullet to go near into someone, and so many people will be driven to react again. That's the reality of it. So for me, it was a baton. And so I applied to join several organisations that I knew of. I never got no response back from them. So I just happened upon a stall, which was the Socialist Workers' Party in Belfast City Centre, who worked for that brief period, doing stuff on parades and stuff. I signed a form, thinking nothing of it. And then the guy who got the thing passed on to him, he just lived around the corner where I lived in the leafy suburbia. He called around to my house. I ignored him a second time, but I have to say it was the persistence of chasing me up and then after me and sitting talking politics that I went along to a meeting. And the first meeting I went to, there was about four or five people in the room, and I'm not messed about. One talked like Karl Marx, and the other one looked like Karl Marx, and there was a couple of others. And the thing was just a way over my head. I was hearing words that, you know, I will need a dictionary for every second sentence. That was the reality of it, and I'm going like, what have I let myself in for here? But saying that, whenever you get back to the bar afterwards, where usually what, nearly years afterwards to talk about what you've said, then an ordinary, what I would call an ordinary working class conversation came into being, and you started to realise, you know, there was things there. Although saying that, to four or five people in a room, when they're talking about mass revolution, and in a theoretical sense, I went, hard as possible. But given my experiences of the past, given that I wanted to do something, I got involved and I threw my whole work and my whole life into that for the first several years.
What type of campaigns were you involved in then, during your involvement?
Well, in the early days, it was, the SWP were very into the issue of student fees. I remember an early occupation at Queen's University for several days. I remember standing up seeing a picture of myself in the Irish News, standing where other people blocking the roads and stuff like that there. It was, what I found was, given all the theoretical stuff, the SWP were either people who were mainly students or people who I would see to be very professional. And most people in working class areas were seen very professional, in the sense a lot of them would have been lecturers.
In the cultural sense? Yeah.
In the cultural sense, yeah. Yeah, they would have been lecturers and, you know, psychiatrists or doctors or whatever, you know. They were very... To me at that time, in the culture sense, yeah, they would seem to be professional people, and there was students as well. But saying that, you know, within a very short period of time, I was then become branch secretary in Belfast. We then worked to up to four branches, and like I was out four or five nights every single week, trying to build it as well. Early hours in the morning to late night, so we moved to four or five branches.
You were the number one key speaker then?
Four branches, and then I became Northern Secretary. After I became Northern Secretary, before I became Northern Secretary, I was on the Political Committee in Dublin, which was an experience.
Was that the Political Bureau?
The plague of Euro, yes, I would say that in a way, you know, because at the end of the day, I'll give them a reason shortly.